Welcome to Cancer Clearly, a podcast about the cancer experience told from every angle.
Welcome to the Cancer Clearly podcast. I am Brandi Bryant. I am here with Dr. Kashyap Patel from the Carolina Blood and Cancer Care Associates and Dr. Eric Sinke with MD Anderson Cancer Center. And I am again Brandi Bryant with Amplity and here to talk about community oncology and in practice and you all, your careers and what we can do in community oncology. So before we jump in, I want to acknowledge that you all aren't just two oncologists, but you have a history. Do you mind telling me briefly how you all know each other?
Yeah, I mean, our families know
Yeah, so almost like 25 plus years. And I want to step back and say exactly what happened. July 4th, 2002, I was on call. I went to see a patient in the telemetry unit at the Piedmont Medical Center. I came across this incredibly nice, polite cardiologist. I shake hands with him. He says, I'm Sushil Singhi. And turns out to be, that's his father.
Yes.
And we are best friends since then.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, we are best friends since then. So that's how I think in my son went to Duke, he went to Duke. So there are so many common connections.
Yes.
And it's here a small town. It's a small community. Yeah. Everyone knows everybody. Yeah. And it's that everyone feels like family, right?
Yeah. So the best thing is look at how the community practice work. I had someone from D.C. came to see me. She works in big committee for personal issue. And she said, you know, I'm trying to get my coronary calcium score down and I'm having a hard time getting the appointment.
Mm-hmm.
I call his dad. I said, Sushil, I have this colleague who needs this done. Send her over.
Yeah.
No appointment.
Yes.
No, nothing. Just send her over. I mean, that's how we work in the community clinic.
Yes. And that's the advantage of the small kind of community. I grew up in a very tiny town, so I understand. that connection. So Dr. Patel, when people think of cutting edge cancer care, they often picture major academic centers. But the reality is that most cancer is diagnosed in the community setting.
Yes.
What do you wish more people understood about the role community oncology plays today?
You know, I think it's the way I look at cancer care is an ecosystem. So we are in a small community. We diagnose patients. They come to us and then we do everything possible for them. But the best way we look at for cancer is I have a backup with certain specialists because I don't do everything.
Yeah.
There are things beyond my pay grade like bone marrow transplant, CAR T cell therapy. So the way we explain to our patients is that we are here to look after you. And if you ever need super specialist care, we have their cell phone number. We'll have you see them. And that's how I think, you know, care should be taken. The way I look at advantage of community is most of the patients cannot afford to travel to tertiary care center. Mm-hmm. So we get second opinion with them. We even sometimes have them go and see them in person. But in general, when you look at week to week or sometimes twice a week, if they have to come, it's impossible for patients to travel all over. And some of our patients even don't feel comfortable parking in a spiral, you know, high-rise building. They have to they're confused.
Yeah.
The struggle. So, I mean, I think it's cancer care is a collaborative care between the tertiary care centers and people like us. And we always say that if you need a second opinion, the first thing I say is, let me know because I'll choose the best person or if you know where you want to go.
Yes. Yeah.
That's how we work.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Dr. Singhi, in a large hospital system, you see a lot of patients after they've already been diagnosed or referred. From your perspective, what are the biggest challenges patients face in getting diagnosed in a timely way?
Oh, wow. This one really hits home for me because I specialize on young onset lung cancer, which is patients that we define as under the age of 50. And unfortunately, the majority of those patients, over half of them, have what we call delayed diagnoses, right? Where they present with symptoms that we're worried about, that we're getting concerned about, but they're dismissed. They're chalked up with having anxiety, asthma, pneumonia, you name it, everything but cancer, right?
Yes.
They're too young to get cancer, which is a myth, right? So I think the first really unmet need is just patient education and awareness and advocacy for them, saying that young lung cancer is a thing, young cancers are a thing. I think I love how you beautifully said that cancer care takes a village and that collaboration is of utmost importance. And I love, love, love that you are also an advocate for your patients in terms of second opinions, because
absolutely,
there are clinical trials, right, that are available for patients that are not everywhere. Ideally, one day we will increase access, and I strongly believe it, to all types of clinical trials in the community and academic centers, because we need to meet patients where they are.
Exactly.
But I think really what you emphasize, the collaborative effort, cancer care takes a village, and making sure that patients' needs are met either at the community or at an academic center or both, right? I think it's really important.
Yeah, and that kind of segues even into my next question. So once a patient is diagnosed, what are the barriers then? It's the access,
yep,
is what you're saying is one of the big barriers. Are there any other barriers that are they have for accessing treatment?
Yeah, I mean, I think financial toxicity we've hinted off
of course
is a big one. And then another toxicity we don't talk a lot about is the time toxicity.
Oh,
right?
My God. Oh, my, yes, God.
There's so many mandated appointments that are needed sometimes, yeah, especially for clinical trials.
Yes.
I mean, even the time it takes to park, like you said, yes, to go to the pharmacy, pick up your medicines, do all, yeah, of this. It takes a lot of time and effort.
Yes.
And I would say we have to be respectful of the time that patients want to spend outside of the confines of a cancer center. It's so important.
And I think going back to, I was just talking to Christiana before, I said, in value-based care, we never measure time that we give back to the patient.
Yeah. Mm.
So imagine that if patient has a year to live, and if you are able to prevent hospitalization, that could be prevented by checking on time their CBC and bring them every day for, you know, IV antibiotics. If we give 10 days back to a patient with stage 4 lung cancer, would you another year or two?
Yeah.
That value is immeasurable, and that's the reason why we need to shift our attention. He very rightfully said about time, but the other thing I'm kind of, you know, we are doing a lot of social determinants of health,
yeah, mm-hmm,
unmet health related social needs. For example, if there's a patient living in Chester, South Carolina, about 40-50 miles away from me, they have two young kids, and if they don't have caregiver at home, these are the,
yeah,
issues.
To take,
and according to 2020 ASR report, 34% cancer deaths are preventable in America if we did not have unmet health-related social needs.
Wow.
So that's why we started a foundation called No Left Alone. And we make sure that every patient, whether they need Uber, whether they need ride, food, and you'll be surprised to see about 50% patients sometimes say that they may not have food next month because if they're working at a Walmart, if they do, or maybe any other job.
Yes, yeah. Every dollar counts.
Every dollar counts. And then, you know, the Walmart abroad, because most of the places have Walmarts, and if they're to take time away from work,
right,
it becomes hard for them.
Yes,
right?
Because then they can even lose, they lose every dollar, every hour that they're missing,
exactly,
work is money missed.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because not everyone has PTO and all of these carries.
Yeah.
Right. You know, all of this ability to be able to take off and take time. And
mm-hmm,
it all adds up. And so it's really critical to think about the, mm-hmm, time, which is money.
Yes, time is money.
Yeah, and the only thing we cannot reproduce in this universe is a time,
right?
Yes, yeah.
It's the most valuable resource,
yeah,
forever.
Yeah, I feel like that really answered one of my follow-up questions, like who are the underserved people in the community? But we've kind of touched on the people who, you know, are working parents or,
yeah,
just,
yeah,
have hourly jobs. Yeah. Not, and even when you have a job that's a full-time salaried position, it's still a lot,
right?
Because then you risk losing your job if you're gone too much,
mm-hmm,
right? You know, so it's a lot to think about. So I'm going to Dr. Patel. Independent practices are under a lot of pressure right now. What are the biggest challenges you're seeing, and how do they affect patient care?
So first of all, we have this wave of consolidation, and you'll be proud to know that we are the last truly physician-owned practice left in the state of South Carolina.
Wow.
We call the last Alamo. So my
last home.
My senior partner, Dr. Vesh,
yeah,
when he retired, he gave me a small, actually, emblem of Alamo. He said, Kashyap, keep it because I know that until you are alive, you're going to be independent.
Oh,
yes.
Wow,
yeah.
But challenges, yeah, are, for example, big health systems are buying primary care.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they're strangling referral source.
Yep.
Then there's a site of care differential. I get paid $100 and the institution across the state, or maybe across the street, will get paid $400 for the same services.
Mm.
So it's a site of care differential.
Mm-hmm.
Third thing actually is a 340B because many institutions qualify for this huge discount, yeah, from pharma. And it's good if they use it for the right purpose. The intention of the program has been to help institutions that look after poor. But what a lot of institutions do is they use that money to strangle the growth of the competition. And, you know, in our area, there is a CEO of a not-for-profit health system that doesn't pay county tax, state tax, federal tax, get 340B. They have sued over 3,000 Carolinians out of their credit, but the CEO takes on $26 million in his paycheck.
Wow.
So the lowest paid person in the institution gets about $18 and the CEO gets 400 times more.
That is a huge problem with corporations. And
that is the reason why so small practice cannot survive, because you have to be able to, you know, retain people, hire employees. And if you cannot have referral source that sustain, it's tough. In Rock Hill, where, you know, his dad and we practice, we used to have lung surgeon who could do cancer surgery. There's nobody left there. We used to have neurosurgeon who would do brain surgery. There's nobody left there. We're like four pulmonologists. They all left. There's only one visiting pulmonologist who comes. I'm saying, there are healthcare deserts appearing because of the wave of consolidation.
Yeah. Well, we thank you for having this independent clinic and providing the service to community, because it is so necessary. And we didn't even touch on your foundation, which helps so many people in the community through the NOLA Foundation.
Yeah.
So,
and I have a rule that every year on my birthday, I multiply my birthday by $1,000 and I put my own personal money. So by now, I've given about close to $250,000 into foundation that goes for the patient care.
I'm doing the math for your age rate.
$65,000 this year.
Lot. That's amazing. It's so beautiful for you to give back to people as you're helping them
being
treated. It's like that we need to multiply. I mean, we need to clone.
He's has donated money as well. His dad has donated money to our foundation as well.
And I love that you all, that like you have this as a mentor, right? Like not only your father, but this is a wonderful person to like look after. Like, oh my gosh, I'm just so touched, as I'm sure you are. Okay, I'll try to focus. Dr. Patel. Oh, I already answered. Dr. Patel and Dr. Singhi.
Okay.
Most patients are diagnosed and treated in smaller hospitals or community settings, even when they may need a referral later. What does good coordination and continuity of care look like across those settings?
I would say prioritizing the patient and the patient's goals, right? And also their resources. I think that's the number one thing. My intention is for patients to truly live their lives and not just survive with cancer, right? And to be able to do that, if they have to go back home and they have to get their treatments back at home so they can take care of their kids, go watch their kids' soccer game, go to that dance recital, that needs to be a priority, right? In addition to focusing on survival, it's living with cancer. And so I think partnership with our community colleagues and partners is huge. And so probably over half of my patients are not from Houston. They're not from Texas. I see a lot of second, third opinions. And those patients go back home and have a really good relationship with their community oncologist. And they're incredible humans who really step up to play, who take a new patient consult the same day because they know that person's grandma, right? Or they know the person themselves. They're a member of that community, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yes, I love that.
So we are trying to build something called 5P Coalition, which is physicians, pharma, policymakers, patients, and payers. We host a meeting once every 3 months. My foundation sponsors it, and I get doctors from the atrium. No one tells, because they are not my enemies. They are not my competitors.
Yes.
They are my colleagues. And by having that one-to-one interactions with the professionals who are able to do what I cannot provide, it makes it easy for me to pick up a phone and call the cell phone of my colleague in Charlotte and say, hey, I need help. I don't do this service. Would you be willing to see this patient? And so we had two meetings already, about 30 plus specialists from Charlotte and our area get together in cancer care. And then, you know, we bring payers as well. And we also bring pharma, because there should be no compartmentalization. There should be an ecosystem of successful delivery of healthcare. And that's the only way we can create this secured feeling of patient care that's going to be optimally effective.
Yes.
Patients first.
Right? Patients first. That's exactly what I was thinking, because all of this community care, in the end, it's about what is best for the patients. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want. Okay, so if each of you could change one thing to make cancer care easier to access and deliver in the community, what would it be? One thing.
I think we've got to figure out how to bring more trials to meet patients where they are. Can I give you two? My other one is, my passion is patient education, right?
Yes.
And I think there really needs to be investment in helping patients understand the reasoning behind why one treatment plan may be better than the other, right? Informed mm-hmm. and shared decision-making. It's a beautiful thing. We're at ASCO, right? And we're hearing about all these new treatment options that bring hope, but that also bring very nuanced decision-making, right? And mm-hmm. so I think if we can help patients along the way to make those decisions together to truly make informed and shared decisions, I would love to do that.
Yes. Dr. Patel?
I think absolutely. So shared decision-making, informed decision-making, but also I believe we should have universal coverage because no patient should be left behind without coverage. And then also make sure that we identify their unmet health-related social needs because cancer care is an ecosystem.
Yeah.
Your child may need, child care if you have to go for a chemotherapy. You may have to take time off from the job. You may need to have continued insurance. You may have to have coverage. For example, if I want to send a patient to MD Anderson, I want to make sure that their insurance company will cover because they have right. things that I don't do at my clinic.
Yes, yeah.
So we want to make sure that we build a sustainable ecosystem for healthcare delivery. Health is a fundamental right of every human being. And at stage, we are failing, when you look at 2020 ACI report again, that 34% cancer deaths are preventable. Or when you look at the map of New Orleans, between 25-mile zip code difference, there's about 25-year difference in life expectancy.
Yes, I know. Read about that.
Your zip code should not impact your
exactly.
health.
Exactly. Thank you.
Yes.
I'm getting chills.
Yeah.
It, not the place where you're born should decide how you're going to live.
Yes. No.
Yeah. And only a 25-mile difference. I'd yes. be like, come on. You've yeah. got to do better. And I appreciate you all both for fighting for this.
Yes.
For the community, for people, for patients. Okay, and then we've got one just kind of sizzle kind of thing we're doing.
Okay.
What is one buzzword? Now, this time you have to only give me one,
oh,
Dr. Singh.
Okay.
What was your one ASCO buzzword you're hearing everywhere this year? One.
Minimal residual disease. So
okay.
liquid biopsy.
Okay, all right. I love that.
GLP-1. GLP-1 drugs. Yes, they've made an appearance here at ASCO. And so there are some exciting research posters and presentations to look out for.
All right. Thank you both so much
Thank
for your
you.
Time today.
Thank you, Brandy. It's been
truly the highlight of my ASCO.
To always connect with you and to see you.
Yeah, absolutely.
You guys are amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If this conversation resonated with you, be sure to subscribe and share it with a colleague, a family member, or a friend. Thank you for showing up, for listening with care, and for being a part of this community. This has been Cancer Clearly.